Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast. My name is Scroobius Pip and this is episode 306 and it's the first guest of 2020. Thank you for tuning in, guys. And thanks for all the love for the Films of the Year podcast that came out on Monday. Always, always a big reaction to that. If you've listened already, one of the Films of the Year is Uncut Gems, which is... It's directed by the Safdie brothers, who are next week's guest, and I wanted to mention it now because it's out on limited cinemas from January 10th. So I wanted to give that a shout now ahead of the podcast. In the podcast, obviously, I'll let you know it's on Netflix in time to come. But yeah, as you will have heard if you heard that end of the year one or Films of the Year, sorry, you will have heard. It's one of two films, along with Waves. In fact, The Lighthouse as well, that I really recommend seeing in the cinema. And Monos, actually. Four. There's only four I said you have to see in the cinema, really. But yeah, Uncut Gems is one that the sound of the film, really, the cinema is the only place to do it justice. So anyway, enough of that. This week's guest is Carl Pilkington. How exciting is that? I didn't mention this for ages because I was lining it up and I wanted it to be the first proper guest of the year. Because Carl is one of the reasons I podcast, I guess. The Ricky Gervais podcast with Stephen Merchant and Carl Pilkington was the first podcast I became obsessed with, along with then Adam Buxton and Joe Cornish. If this is your first time tuning in to the Distraction Pieces podcast, may I recommend going and enjoying the Stephen Merchant episode or the Adam Buxton episode or the Joe Cornish episode, you know, or Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, had some wonderful guests over the years. But yeah, I was very excited to have this chat and I know that Carl wasn't doing loads and loads of podcasts. I believe he did the Two Shot podcast, which is one of my favourites with Craig Parkinson. He's amazing. So keep an eye out for that or check the podcast out in general. But yeah, I know he wasn't doing tons of podcasts and I know he's not a fan of doing tons of press. So I felt really honoured that he'd requested to come on Distraction Pieces. So I won't ramble on too much. As ever, speechdevelopmentrecords.com is where you can buy my music. I've just added my debut album from years ago. I've added it on vinyl for the first time into the web store. But also loads of merch, winter merch, my Edinburgh Fringe Show DVD, all that kind of thing. And patreon.com/ScroobiusPip is where you can pledge $1 a month to support the podcast and have previews of who's coming. So everyone on Patreon knew that I'd recorded with Carl before Christmas. So yeah, that's all I need to tell you. Actually, that isn't all I need to tell you. I mentioned that next week's guest, the Safdie Brothers film Uncut Gems, is out on January 10th. But, I mean, what we're here to talk about, Carl Pilkington's new series, or the new series of his show, Sick of It, starts on Friday 10th of Jan at 10 p.m. on Sky One. And there's six episodes, I think. And yeah, the ones I've seen have been absolutely fantastic. We talk about that. We talk about podcasts. We talk about everything. But yeah, I almost started the podcast without getting the essential plug of Sick of It starts on Sky One at 10 p.m. on Friday, the 10th of Jan. Set your series link now or tune in live. Anyway, this is episode 306 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with Carl Pilkington. Right, but continue. You were just saying about how you were a podcast fan.
Yeah, I wasn't at the beginning. You know, when we first started doing them, when Ricky brought the idea of doing podcasts.
Because that's it, because you guys started it all, essentially.
I don't know, so did we, or is that...
Are you really... In the UK, I think you definitely did. I think there was stuff going on in America,
right?
Maybe, but in the UK, it was 100% you guys. I had a weird thing when Adam Buxton was starting his podcast over here, and he was asking me for some advice, and I was like, it was... You and Ricky and Steve and Adam and Joe were the two podcasts, were the only ones I'd listened to back in the day, because they were the only two that were about, and Russell's one, I guess. But yeah.
So it seems odd that you're a late listener to them.
Yeah. But I think because I think they've changed quite a bit as well, haven't they? And it's not just kids messing about in bedrooms anymore,
doing
a show for the mates.
Yeah.
It's proper. And I like the freedom. This is the only sort of, you know, I'm doing press here for like Sick of It Series 2. And if there's one bit I hate doing with this job, it's the press.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable with it.
I was going to say, I can't imagine you enjoying press in any way, shape or form.
No, I think you've got to be a certain type of person and have a certain confidence to be able to sit and talk about yourself and sell something that you've done. And I just haven't got that.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's like I've always been happy with the stuff I've done, stuff I've made. But as far as I'm concerned, once it's made, it's kind of like, well, can't Sky tell everyone about it?
Yeah.
Why am I flogging it?
Yeah.
Or who's going to believe me anyway? Even if I say, oh, yeah, it's really good, you go, yeah, well, you would say that.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You can't beat word of mouth. I want other people to go, oh, yeah, I like that. It's just weird. I mean, it was a screening today in the Q&A, and honestly, I didn't sleep last night. Just worried about, oh, God, you know, because everything makes sense. When you're writing something, everything makes sense at the time of writing.
Yep.
And it's been a long time, you know, all the editing and everything takes months. So I've kind of moved on in my head.
Yeah.
And then people go, what was the, where did the idea come from? I can't remember.
Yeah.
You should have asked me like 7 months ago.
And again, it's all stuff that, it's like if you repeat the same word over and over again, it stops sounding
stops
like
making
a word.
Sense.
So when you've written it, it makes sense. When you've then spent several months filming it,
yeah,
it's made less and less sense.
Yeah.
When you've then been watching edits and rushes,
yeah,
you don't even know what you're looking at anymore.
No. And
so
it's
by
me.
The time it's
me
there,
as well. You know, it's not
exactly
like Richard who I wrote it with. He can sort of watch it and, you know, he's involved, but not as involved. But when it's me telling a story that we came up with and I'm in it twice, it's just very hard for me to look at it as a outsider.
Yeah.
So because of that, I'm just, I'm a nervous wreck when I've got a bit better. I mean, this jumper I'm wearing today, I normally always wear this when I'm doing a Q&A. It's like my security blanket. If you look back online at videos of stuff, it's got holes in it and everything, but it's just a little security blanket. Like, well, I wore this ages ago when I did the first one. It was all right.
Is there a history of it? Is the one you wore at the first?
Yeah. I've had it years. My mate takes a piss out of me because every time he sees me, he's like, you've got that jumper on again. But I'm really rubbish at it. And I remember the first one, I remember feeling sick in anything in front of crowds.
Yeah.
And that's why when it comes to press, I don't like it because, and that's why I like podcasts, because this is just me and you having a chat in a room.
Yeah.
But when you do other press, you know, they say, oh, well, you go on a chat show, and I did it once, did Alan Carr, and nothing against Alan Carr, he does what he does, but just that whole live audience. And then an audience there laughing when you say something. It's like, well, I'm being funny.
Yeah.
And it sort of knocks you out a little bit. And it sort of knocks you out of your train of thought. I was thinking something then. And everyone laughed. And now I don't know. And, you know, I remember him sort of going, as soon as I walked on, he was like, oh, you haven't made much of an effort. You know, with the clothes they had on.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, I haven't. But it's kind of like, well, this is what I normally wear. And I want to be comfortable.
It
made me go, I am so not for this sort of work.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet you need to do it.
Yeah.
You need to be able to go out there and talk about what you do to get people to watch it. But I can't do it.
It's a different world, right? Because again, I've mentioned this a few times recently, but I watched a series called Nathan For You, and I love it. I think it's amazing. It's this weird comedian and he's doing these odd things in real life, and you can't tell if he's acting or playing a character or if it's really him. But on one of them, essentially, it was on Paramount.
Right.
It was big in America on Comedy Central, and it's like this praised show. Right. Like, I think you'd love it, honestly.
Yeah.
It's on. I think it's on Sky on box sets and that. But he did a thing about the fact.
See, he's got a promotion. He's not here. He's not having to sell it.
Yeah,
it's just word of mouth. You see, that's what I'm talking about.
But that's it. He did an episode that's about the fact that, and it's something I hadn't really realised, but it makes sense. But I'm the same as you. I could never do it. But these big film stars who are going on your Alan Carrs and all this, they have their set anecdotes planned, and here's what we're going to say. Here's what we're going to do. And then you watch it, and they will have done it in the UK, in America, in Australia. It'll be the same things. And it makes perfect sense, because if you've only got 10 minutes, you need to make it as appealing as possible. But coming from yourself, from the podcast world and radio world, that's not how it works.
No.
And for me, it feels completely alien to go, I used to feel weird, like, doing the same songs in the same order when I was touring doing music, because I'm like, well, what if someone was here last night? It's like, well, no, you're not meant to... You're allowed to do the same thing, but it'd feel the same with an anecdote. If I've got my set anecdote, I'd be like, someone will have heard this before and I'm going to feel like a right prick.
Yeah.
And it's that weird thing repeating. Of that organising it. And yeah.
Yeah. No, and with stories, I mean, all the podcast stuff that we've done over the years, I mean, one of the reasons it just couldn't carry on is because the amount of stuff we'd said, we don't know if we've talked about it before.
Yeah. It's the biggest, you know? I think it's the biggest issue in podcasting, particularly with mates, because... You discuss shit. You don't remember if you... And then you'll do something and people go, you've told that story before. Like,
yeah.
All right.
I honestly can't remember, you know.
I've heard some of my mates' stories hundreds of times, but I love them because we get drunk and they tell that story again.
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes, you want to hear a story again. It's like, there's someone new there. Yeah. It's like, tell them that story.
But
I struggle with that. Just the giving it, you know, the perfect sound bite. And I do lean towards... reasons not to watch it or something, or you know, it's just the way I'm sort of programmed that I'm a bit. It's a confidence thing. It's just if I say it's not very good, then they can't moan at me and say it's not very good, is it? Because then I can go, well, I told you that.
Yeah,
that's how it works. I've kind of always been like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's preparing yourself for the failure, which can become self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah,
but I'm ready for it to fail. It's probably going to fail then, mate.
but it's only the thing of, you know, the if it does, you have protected yourself a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to change. I don't think I don't even want to get rid of that. I think it's healthy.
Yeah,
to not be confident, because it sets you up. It's a bit like in Sick of It with the inner self. It's just there in it going, people aren't going to like this. It's not gonna... And that's what makes you work harder.
Yeah.
It makes you work, you know, nothing's ever good enough. So you never just write one script and go, that'll do. You read it and you go, oh, that's not, how can I make that better?
Yeah.
How can I change it? Or change it? Still not very good. You know, the voice in your head, go on, what's that bit about? How's that even made it on the page? That's rubbish. Change that. And that's what it's like. Right up until the filming of the scene, I'm constantly on to Richard, sending emails at 3 a.m, 4 a.m, going, listen, that scene tomorrow, what a change it. And he's like, Jesus, you know.
Leave it alone, Carl.
Leave it. It's fine. It's like, no, honestly. And then he's kind of going, but what does that mean? If you change that, does that have a knock-on effect to another scene? Isn't that...
Mm.
But that's also what's good about it. I quite like that on the edge of your seat stuff. I suppose that's as close to doing the travel stuff.
Yeah.
Because that was just film stuff and see what happens. Whereas when you're writing stuff, you haven't got that.
Yeah.
It's a different ball game altogether. You can keep tweaking.
Particularly when you're playing two characters in the same scene. You can't improvise that much, because
really.
It needs to be quite tight to what you're then going to shoot separately. And for those who don't know, Sick of It, so series 2 is on its way.
Yeah.
And it's a series where you're playing a guy called Carl, and he's got another version of him who no one else can see, who's just kind of talking. And I think it's a perfect setup, because I think there's a few reasons. I think it's a really even cleverer than it may look setup. And one part is what you were known for was essentially the second character, the one that is saying, "No, this is shit. That's nonsense," and kind of being irrational, because that's what you were pushed to and played up to on the podcasts.
Yeah.
But the thing I love about it is it means that you can tackle some big subjects in a way that a lot of sitcoms wouldn't feel comfortable, because you've got one character there that you're already establishing is slightly irrational. So there's things from midlife crisis to body issues. The one I think is nailed the most is the caring for or being a carer for a family member. Because the imaginary Carl can say, God, this is a nightmare. Oh, she's doing my head in.
Yeah.
And the real Carl can go, look, it's a relative. Let's relax a bit and be nice. But it means, because those things are real as well. And
it's the best of both worlds.
Yeah, it's so hard to discuss a lot of that stuff, because there's so many sensitive issues that people are scared to talk about.
God,
But if you can have someone go, you know what, I love my nan or mum or whoever I'm caring for, but also there's points it ruins my week yeah. that I've had to wipe her ass, or that I've had to do this or do that.
Yeah, I'm glad you've picked up on it, because a lot of people, especially, you know, because I've done stuff with Ricky and Steve, people always sort of class me as some sort of comedian or something, and I'm not. I'm far from it. I'm not, you know, in just being associated with them, they make jokes. Ricky's got his big laugh, you know. So they go, oh, they're all funny. Yeah. And I'm not, you know, I'm just me. Do you know what I mean? And now and again, all right, I might say something funny, but so does everyone, but it don't mean you're funny. And it was always the big thing I was worried about when, you know, I was done with the travelling. I couldn't do it anymore. And Sky were like, I was thought about writing something. And I was worried that it was going to be like, yeah, but they're going to want something where it's all about laughs.
Yeah.
And I'm not drawn towards that on the telly. I don't really watch that many comedies. I like stuff about life, struggles, you know. Kez is my favourite film of all time. You know, it's not that in a comedy.
Yeah.
So there's funny bits in it with the PE scene. But I like the... I mean, did you watch the thing recently about it with Greg Davis?
No.
He did like a documentary going back and he saw the real Casper. And they've shown a clip in the middle of it of where he gets the dead bird out of the bin. Bit of a spoiler if, you know. I welled up.
Yeah.
I was crying. I mean, Suzanne was there, my girlfriend, and she doesn't see me cry that much. Yeah. And so she was laughing because she cries at happiness. Do you know, like on Strictly when someone's going, oh, and that dance was for me gran, and she's here tonight. Oh, shut up. Yeah. And the crowd's going, oh, she's welling up at that. Whereas I'm like, oh, playing that card, playing the card to get the vote.
You want to get me, pull a dead bird out of me.
Exactly, yeah. But honestly, with that Kez, even though I haven't watched the whole film there and it was just that clip, it took me right back to the film. And I, honest to God, big lump in my throat. And that, to me, getting that sort of reaction is loads better than a laugh.
Yeah.
I know you've got to have a laugh, but for me, I just think that's more important to tap into the stresses of the world, the thing that get you down. And it's weird because some people who enjoyed, like, the travel stuff watched Sick of It 1 and they were a bit like, oh, it's, you know, not that funny, is it? And it's like, no, it isn't. You're absolutely right, it isn't. And a lot of Idiot Abroad and that, if you took out some of the activities and just had my talking head, it's not that funny.
Yeah.
It's me going on with issues and what I see of things and what I think. And it was just those images of me dancing with a tribe that made a lot of people go, oh, look, he's dancing with a tribe, look. Oh, look at him, look, you can see his bollocks there, look. And that was, for some people, that's funny.
Yeah.
That, for me, was there as a bit of colour and showing a tribe in some jungle. So some people, it was easier to understand, whereas I think Sick of It is the same. It's the same. It's the things that are in my head. They came out of my head. The things I struggle with in life. But it's got a narrative this time instead of just, oh, he's dancing.
Yeah.
Oh, he's eating a, you know, a squashed toad.
Yeah.
You know, all of, it's the same because that's all I've got.
Yeah.
You know, I am me. That is all I've got to work with. I'm not a proper actor. I am what I am. And that's what we make programmes out of. So it is me, but just different, but for some people it's too much.
Well, it's what I like about it is it doesn't, it's going to sound like an odd thing to say, but I don't think it plays for comedy or for drama.
No.
It just plays for reality, which is odd when it's a show where there's an imaginary version
that
of you.
That was the toughest thing.
It just plays life, and then there's going to be humour in there, there's going to be drama in there.
Yeah.
Any scene, if you added a backing track of Gervais's laugh,
it's funny.
There you go, it's the comedy bit.
Yeah.
But you've removed that and gone, well, you decide if you find it funny or not, if you find it dramatic or not. And I think I like that about it because I think it's so, I think we are at a time with TV where it doesn't have to be, is this for the comedy department or the drama department? Is this, where does this slot? It's like, well, just watch it. And you'd like, and most you might of like the best it. Stuff these days will have hugely dramatic moments and then laugh out loud moments. Yeah. There's a real mixture in it.
Well, it works as well because your emotions are all over the shop, you know, and that is how life is, And that's what I try to do with it. You know, starting off with a little idea for an episode, just a little small scene and that plants, you know, it's a little seed and then that grows and how that has a knock-on effect in an episode. So it might seem like, oh, this is just a scene for an observation about something in life. But it shows how in life, it's like that it's the butterfly effects or something people talk about.
Yeah.
You know, a butterfly flaps its wings and it causes an earthquake somewhere or whatever. It's a bit like that. That's the bit I enjoyed most about writing the episodes, is that thing of where does it start and then how is that linked to the theme of that episode?
Yeah.
And you do have to watch it and tech in everything that's happening to understand it. If you're one of them people who just want something to look up now and again whilst you're pissing about with Twitter, I think you're going to be a bit lost.
Yeah.
You do have to follow it. It's not... like, it's not you've been framed.
How mad that it's a weird thing now to spend months and months working on something and then have the audacity to ask for people's attention.
I know.
How dare you ask for my actual attention? It's like, yeah, if you could pop your phone down
and more, watch this thing we've worked on,
you'll get more out of it.
More telly than ever, and yet more distractions.
Yeah.
And, God, yeah. I feel like a waste of time sometimes. It does get me down.
Yeah.
Because that's just the way people watch stuff now. I saw The Joker recently in the cinema.
Yeah.
And people just on the phone.
People on their phone in the cinema, I struggle not to have a word or kick off, because it's like, what are you doing?
What are you doing? It's not cheap. It's not cheap going to the cinema.
I've genuinely got a mate that I've not spoken to in 3 or 4 years because I did a post saying that if you get your phone out in the cinema, you're scum. And they messaged me separately to say, you know, sometimes... And I was like, no, if you do that, you're scum. And yeah. I wouldn't back down, so we just stopped being friends. Genuinely, we just went, well, that's that then.
So what was his reason for thinking it was...
Well, they were saying... It was actually a girl, but she was saying, well, what if, you know, I'm worried about... You know, I've recently had a kid. What if I'm worried about my daughter at home? And my point was... Don't go to the cinema then. Yeah. Go somewhere else and do something that you can have. And again, that's not having a go at anyone, but watch a film at home or go out for a meal or do any of these other
plus,
things.
You want to enjoy
that aren't
it.
Going to ruin someone else's fun. Because again, if I'm in the cinema and there's a light, that is a distraction.
Of course
and it does ruin it. But they were saying all these different scenarios, they were saying, and my answer always was, you shouldn't be going to the cinema then.
No.
If you can't
trust your babysitter or whatever to do the job that you've
been paid to
do.
And I completely understand that fear and panic, but still it's like, well, do something else, because it's clear until you're comfortable.
Yeah.
And then go and catch a film, mate.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I'm with you.
It's killer. But speaking of film, of cinemas and whatnot, then how have you found watching the show with an audience? Because you've done that today, because it's the weird thing, the way you came to the public eye was you sharing, as you said, a lot of your thoughts that you don't particularly think are funny, and Gervais and Merchant cracking up at them.
Yeah, they
so
make
it was
it funny,
you'd probably said those things without anyone laughing, perfectly normal. Them laughing made it some of the best comedy podcasting ever.
Yeah.
So, is there a similar thing with the show where you've made it and then there's people laughing at points that you're like, as when you're on Alan Carr, you're like, why are you laughing?
There was
but it's a good
bit.
Thing. In this situation, it's
but,
a positive,
you
right?
know, people are going to do what they're going to do, and it is positive for people to laugh. But then I'm sat there worrying, going, are they getting the other messages in this, or are they just waiting for that next bit that might make them laugh?
Right.
That's my worry.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's also the thing of, oh, God, they've just laughed over a bit that's quite important for the sort of storyline. Do you know, like one of the lines that was important?
Right, so missed,
then,
missed a detail because they're laughing.
And I'm thinking, is it going to make sense now? Because it's just like, everybody said they liked
it. Can we rewind it?
Yeah, honestly.
Honestly, you missed a bit there,
guys. It's really important. Like, don't laugh this time. But, like I say, everyone gets something different out of films and programmes, and it's not for me, is it, to sit there. All I can say is it was never... done for laughs. It was more try to deal with the things that stress me out in life and then make a little story about how my mind works and hopefully pull out the heartstrings at some bits and just to enjoy it. It's a difficult one to sell because a lot of telly these days is all, you know, it's heavy, big, heavy stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that isn't me. So... it was just getting that tone, and you hit the nail on the head before about this inner self thing. You know, that could have got in the way. It might have thrown people a little bit. like, oh, is it like Bewitched? Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's oh, it's a little bit quirky, it's a little bit odd that he's got this voice in his head. But I think once people watched it and understood it, they knew, I think they could relate to it. I had messages from people saying they get it, you know, they get what I'm trying to do, and life is that struggle between knowing what the right thing is to do and try to please other people, but at the same time, try to please yourself and, you know, getting that balance right in life.
Yeah. Do you enjoy having an artistic outlet for the things that annoy you? Because I think that's something that Ricky's done in his writing for years. Afterlife's a prime example of it. There's certain scenes in that I'm like, that's not the character angry, that's Ricky angry about something, and he's written, you know what I mean? He's gone, I need to have a rant about this.
I think
could have been a tweet.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine doing anything any other way, really. Yeah. I couldn't write about wizards.
Yeah.
Because I've never thought about them, and I don't know how a wizard thinks and what problems a wizard has. whereas I write about stuff I've worried about and gets to me. So definitely. Yeah. Definitely, there's definitely a case of like emptying my head and having a chance to get rid of some niggles, but not in that sort of, oh, here's an observation, let's put that in it, and that doesn't lead to anything.
Yeah, it's making it go somewhere.
It's making it go somewhere. Yeah, it's not an episode like Grumpy Old Men,
where
it's just like, oh, don't you hate, you know, people do.
Yeah, yeah.
It's something people can relate to, and then, right, what does that mean? Where does that go? Where can it go? I said to you, I love that bit. I love the just having that little daft idea, but going, why do I think that with that? In series one, there was the episode about, you know, screaming kid and babies and all that. And I haven't had kids, and I don't want kids. But I sort of flipped that on its head. And I kind of thought, do I not want kids because the kind of opportunity to have kids has kind of gone now.
Mm.
So is that me convincing myself that I don't want them?
Yeah.
Because it's gone. Right. Now, I don't, at this moment in time whilst I'm sat here with you, I'm not thinking that. Like, I don't think that's why it is. But, you know, whenever you do something, I'm one for sort of thinking back and going, why? I question myself.
Yeah.
Why? So there's an example of it. It's like taking something and twisting it a bit for the sake of an episode, but changing it. You know, I did an episode of Moaning a Life that was about having kids, and I kind of emptied my head and my thoughts on why I don't want them and why we didn't have them, and what's the point, blah, blah, blah. But then there's always another side to that, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like, oh, actually, though, I wonder if I got that right.
Yeah.
Maybe I would have been a brilliant dad. But never. Have you got kids?
No.
Do you want them?
At the moment, no. But again, it's probably that same thing. There'll be a point where I'm going, well, how long can I say at the moment, no?
Yeah.
And when does it just become no?
And it's still,
or when does it become yes? Do you know what I mean? Is that, yeah.
I think if it would have happened by accident,
yeah,
then I'd go, oh, well, there it is.
Yeah.
Let's get on with it. And I'm sure,
it's beautiful, isn't it?
Look at that, and you go on about it, showing it everyone. But it hasn't happened, and I don't want it. But I do sometimes think, oh, well, it might come a time when I go, oh, I got that wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't just want them.
Have you got any pets?
Yeah.
What have you got? A
couple of cats.
Do you like them?
Love them.
That'll do.
And it's, I know, it does do, and we worry about them a lot. Yeah. Like, we don't like going away for more than 4 days, because the cat... We've kind of got one cat, and we've taken on another cat that isn't ours, but it's ours a lot.
Yeah,
it looks after itself, but you know. So we've kind of got two, but really got one. It likes our company and not other people. It's quite scared of other people.
Yeah,
a bit like me. I'm like that. I don't really let people in.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's rubbed off onto me, onto the cat. Yeah. And now when the doorbell goes, I normally ignore the doorbell, and the cat legs it.
Right.
So it is me. We could do an in a cat. Yeah. If we did a series three, we could carry this on. So
I love that. So you're living sick of it, but instead of another Carl, it's the cat.
It'd be a lot easier, I tell you. I'm changing clothes all the time.
It's an interesting one, because people who have kids will get annoyed if you start comparing having a pet to having a kid. But
really?
But there's different things that, like, I can honestly say, if I go around a mate's house, I'm more excited to go around a mate who's got a dog to see their dog than I am to go around and see their kid. And that's not an offensive way. I really think dogs are fucking great. Yeah. They really excite me. So it's perfectly reasonable to say I'm more likely to have a dog than have a child at the moment. Yeah. That's something that feels more, I want to spend my life with that creature in my...
I know, but it's weird, because we got some friends who, like, they've got kids, and they recently said to me, oh, you know, you haven't seen them for a while.
Yeah.
And I went, no, no, no. And they went, they were asking the other day why you never see them. And I went, the heck? And they went, no, they were. I was like, no, they didn't. And it sort of stuck with me a bit, because I think, do you know, and it's not a good thing to do, but do you look at other people and think they're all thinking like you?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I know when I was a kid, I didn't care about my mum and dad's mates or relations. I just wanted to play out.
Yeah.
They're like adults, and all right, I'd be there and go, all right, and then I'd be out. Yeah. I wouldn't sort of be saying to my dad, listen, Dad, why hasn't Uncle Alf been round? I'm seeing him for 2 weeks. Has he got a problem with me? I was busy in my own little head.
Couldn't agree more.
Couldn't give a shit.
Yeah.
So as something changed, they might have been giving me a load of flannel just to make me feel a bit bad. I don't know. But are kids like that now? Do they? Have they changed? Do they like to be around older people more, or... This is what scares me with it. I don't know how the world works.
I completely agree. I think
a bit lost.
One of my biggest realisations, and most important realisations in recent years, is that we don't all think the same and we just think different stuff. Like realising that there's not something wrong with me that I don't particularly want to go out to the pub or to a party, that I'd rather be at home watching a film, whatever. It doesn't mean I'm sad or different. It's like I'm just into different stuff than some of my mates are. And similarly, like... It's relevant at this time of year, I guess. On New Year's Eve, I stay home on my own and I choose a film. Yeah. I select it in advance that I've not seen before and I line that up to watch. I have some great food. I have a bit of a reflection on the year and I love it. It's my favourite night of the year. All my mates think I hate New Year's Eve because I stay at home on my own and watch a film. And no matter how many times I say, no, I'm really happy doing that. What?
Well, they think there's something wrong with
it. They think, oh, he hates New Year's. It's like, no, I'm just... If New Year's is this big event, then I'd rather do something I love for it, rather than go, well, I'm meant to be in an overcrowded pub, overpriced, paying to get in with people who are too drunk and have a horrible time, because that's how you're meant to enjoy New Year's. It's like, right, no, I'll do it. I'll enjoy it the way I enjoy it.
What do you reckon the percentages of people who actually love New Year's Eve?
The percentage of people who actually love it is really low. The percentage of people who manage to convince themselves that they love it is probably a bit higher, because you've invested. Because again, there's so much investment put on it, not just financially but emotionally. It's like it's that big night. It's the big night that we have to have an amazing time.
It's the same with the travel stuff I did, when people were going, "Oh, you lucky bastard, you got to travel the world. Why are you moaning? Why are you moaning?" And I think if they went to these places and were honest with themselves, they'd have found the same problems. But I think because most people, when they go away, it's a holiday and they've worked hard to save the money for the holiday and they get 2 weeks off a year or whatever, they've got to convince themselves that holiday was good.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if it wasn't, what's the point? They've been working hard to make the money for the holiday. So the worst thing that can happen is that they leave that holiday going, that was a waste of time. What a shit that was.
I spent a year building up to this and now it's over.
And it's crap.
Let's look to next year.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of convincing themselves. I think that's what goes on in life. You're just constantly sort of going, that was good, wasn't it? Did you enjoy it? Yeah, I liked it. Did you like it? Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was brilliant, wasn't it? And look, I've got a picture of me smiling to show that. Yeah, I was enjoying it, and I'm going to show other people that I was enjoying it, because I'm smiling, so I'm definitely happy. I definitely enjoyed it, looking at the smile on my face. You know what I mean?
And you'll start to remember it that way as well.
Yeah, well...
Oh, we loved it there.
That's in one of the episodes.
Yeah.
That's touched upon on one of the episodes about, you know, that what you put out there, you know, photographs, you know, how you're told to smile for a photograph. And if you don't, people sort of go, let's take it again, you're not smiling. It's like, well... I've got no reason to. I'm having an all right time, but I don't have to show everyone with a smile that I'm happy.
Again, it's another thing that has confused a few of my close mates for years, is I'm not a big smiler in photos. No. It's like if there's something's happened, I'll smile. But otherwise, I'm like, I'm not going to be looking angry. It's just your normal stance. Here's what I was then.
Yeah.
Rather than a smile now, Give me a reason to smile and I might.
Well, like they say on a passport photo, they just say neutral face, don't they?
Yeah.
You don't sit there grinning like a gawp.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's just like, just look into the camera and that is you. That's your normal face. But now I struggle with all of that. A lot of people can't be dealing with him. He's miserable. He's always moaning. And I think there's a lot more of me out there. I'm not odd. I'm not on my own. And I think that's why some people like it as well, because they do relate.
Yeah.
I think that's all we're looking for, isn't it? People who you can relate to.
Completely.
In life.
On that kind of holiday front, I think part of enjoying a holiday is having a job or a boss to be on holiday from. And I think you lose that sometimes when you go into the creative world.
I was going
to
say that.
So do you miss your XFM days? Because I was at XFM a few years after you, and I had a radio show there, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was still then happy to go on to other things. So it's not like I'm like, oh, I'm pining for those days. But how was that? Because you were just there producing originally. I've read somewhere that friend of the podcast, Gail Poulter. You made her go home crying on her first day. But
do you know what? I don't really remember what was going on.
I've just read it online. I didn't have a chance to
I don't. I don't think I made her get upset.
No,
it was just. I think it was. She had a room full of like people in the studio. Do you know, like all the people?
Yeah.
And they were all saying like, "It's great." After every link, they're all like really positive. And because I'm not like that, you know, they were like, it's good, isn't it? It's good, it's good. And, you know, when you just sort of go, look, yeah, it's fine, but let's just not get carried away. You know, this is just a radio show and it was all right. Now it's special. Yeah.
You did
and
your
I
links.
Think I got sick of that. It was like that over and over again for a couple of hours. It was like, you got through it, you know, well done type thing. And I, who knows what was going on in her life?
Yeah.
It's funny, when you're younger, you don't think about what people are going through, do you?
No.
You just see them as you see them.
Or you're the lead. I say this all the time, but you're the lead in the film, and you don't realise that they're the lead in the
film. That's a good way of doing it.
And they all are. Everyone is the lead
Everyone's
in the film. But it's
got
really
the little
hard
shit
to get your head around
on.
That. And it's natural. It troubled me for a while, because I'm like, well, this is really arrogant and selfish. But it's not. It's natural. Everyone is the lead. But
So at that time, that must have been, I don't know, 15, 16, 17 years ago or something.
Yeah.
So who knows what was going on. But, my time at XFM.
You see, I was happy because I pre-recorded all of my shows. So I was working with a guy, Dan Rido, Chris Bourne and Neil Fearn. And it was just, there wasn't anyone being all, let's make it all hype and positive. Yeah. Because it wasn't live, I guess. There's not that.
Yeah, you've got that extra.
It's like, no, here's my podcast. Yeah. Or here's my radio show. It's like a podcast, essentially. But yeah. But yeah, how was your, because you started in the background and then because of Ricky and that, you were pulled forwards.
Back in, I mean, I'd done radio on my own before years ago, and then they dragged me back into it. And I was worried about it because I'd been sacked from it before, and I was concerned that, oh, here we go again, same thing's going to happen again, going to lose my job, not going to pay the bills. Yeah, so I was worried about it, and it started off, you know, talking once or twice a show. And then the next week, you know, it was like a bit more. Did they enjoy it? You see, I saw it was a bit of extra money. It wasn't that much money, but it was something extra. My girlfriend was working Saturdays anyway, so it was something to get up for. I didn't have much else going on. So it was just, it was all right. Do you know, like, a lot of people love that radio show.
Yeah.
But when you're involved in something, to you, it's just a thing.
We're just doing it. It's work.
We're just doing it.
Yeah.
We turned up, killed a couple of hours. Sometimes they really pissed me off. I mean, there was one show when I left early because I just couldn't. They were annoying me too much, and I went to Hastings. I just got on a train, and the train to Hastings was there. It's like, let's go.
Was there anything that you had to do in Hastings, or was
no?
That just...
It was literally just, I want to get away from here. I want to get away out of London. It's doing me head in, and Ricky annoyed. I can't even remember what he did. I think he. See, it shows what Ricky's like as a person. Do you know, like, how he's interested in the human mind?
Mm-hmm.
And we work, and I think he just pushed the wrong button on me.
Yeah. It's also interesting that it was something that annoyed you enough to get on the train to Hastings, but still you having to rack your brain for which time it was.
It was him. It was him. I think this isn't the occasion that time. I know this was another one that he questioned my ability to do my job.
Right.
You know, And it really pissed me off.
And that's different from questioning your beliefs, your thoughts, your ideas. It's like, no, this is what
I do. This is why I'm here. This is what I do. And he was always, he did, I remember he did it before when I was editing something. And he was going, no, edit from there to there. I want you to leave, but I can't. I'll have to sit here with you now to make sure you do it right. And I was really like, do you know how fucking cheeky that is?
Yeah.
This is what I do.
Yeah.
You know.
I know what I'm doing.
And I really, like, and he was laughing his head off because he saw, like, most stuff doesn't bother me. It's water off a duck's back a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But I think he found it interesting that that was the thing that really pissed me off.
Yeah.
And that's what he does.
Yeah, he finds prods, it. Oh, hello.
He finds it. Oh, there's a, oh, it's like a little, you know, loose tooth or whatever. Just give it a wiggle.
I didn't know that was going
to
be the one.
And then he remembers it, and then he knows how to annoy me when he wants to. So, yeah, it's an odd thing. I look back on it as just, when I first came to London, it was a time when it was all a bit of a struggle, and we didn't have much money, and it was all a bit touch and go if we'd have to go back to Manchester. But by the time I was doing that show with them, things had settled a bit, and that's why I was worried about losing my job. I think I might have even had a mortgage on a small flat. So it was like, it's all right for you lot.
Yeah.
You're made, you two.
Yeah.
But if you fuck this up and I get the sack, because I'm meant to be sort of controlling what you say and do on air, and you're not listening to me. Again, I think that's what people liked. I think listeners like that. I think they could hear me a bit nervous about what they were saying and that. So, yeah, I don't look back on that as anything great. I don't listen back to clips on that. I watch bits of animation and stuff like that that they turn the podcast stuff into.
Yeah.
But I never go back to the XFM stuff. I was a bit depressed as well by the end of working there. I was there for 9 years and I'd got to a point where, do you know when you've been doing a job a long time and you start sort of moaning a bit to younger staff?
Right.
And they're all excited about the job and love it, but you don't because you've been there too long.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, I've got to get out of this.
I'm ruining this for other people.
Yeah.
As well.
And I remember when I was younger at a radio station in Manchester when there was people like that, and I sort of go, why is he moaning? It's a great job.
Yeah.
And I was working for free. You know, I loved it. Why is he not happy? And I just thought, this is the dream that I wanted, to work in radio, but I'm not enjoying it anymore.
Mm.
You know, I've had enough. So it was an odd time, and I remember just deciding one day. I mean, you know, we'd done the radio show. Ricky had mentioned the idea of podcasts, and I remember the boss just sort of walking past me little studio. I just worked on my own in a studio for most of the week, just a tiny room making stuff. And I said to the boss, I said, "Listen, I'm going to call it a day." And he was like, "Yeah, all right, yeah, see you tomorrow." And I went, "No. I mean, I can't do this. Can't do it anymore." And he's sort of like, what's happened? And I'm not enjoying it. I've done it for a long time. I've got to do something else. And it was having that podcast thing there that Ricky said we could do. And, you know, The Guardian sponsored it. And it wasn't much money. I seem to have a figure in my head of like 1,200 quid a month.
Right.
So that was four shows. Was it weekly? Yeah, it was weekly, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it was like, right, well, that's a bit of money, enough to... I didn't have a fancy lifestyle, but it freed me up. It got me out of there, and I suddenly... It was nice having the fear a little bit of, God, I've got to do something now.
Yeah,
I've jacked it in. I've done the hard bit.
You've got nothing to fall back on anymore.
Nothing. Mm. I mean, my girlfriend had a job, but, you know, we couldn't afford to just swan about. So I think I have better memories of podcast stuff.
Yeah.
Because suddenly it felt like this is now the job.
Yeah.
So I've got to like bring something to the party.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we did it. I mean, it's hours and hours and hours worth of stuff, and you just talking. And yeah, I have good memories of it, but there's nothing left. I feel like some fruit that's been sort of squashed and everything's come out of it.
You've been mined of all the gold.
Honestly.
It's an interesting one, because one of the things that comes to mind as well, so the podcast is what really threw you into the public eye hugely. I remember the first time I saw you, it was on an extra of Ricky's Politics DVD.
Right.
And you were looking at your Book of Freaks,
which
was really good fun. You're still a fan of The Unusual?
Yeah, I'll always anything weird in life, I still see things now online where I go, oh, if we were still doing travel shows,
yeah,
I'd be visiting that.
Okay, I'd
want to go and see that. There was a bloke who was reading
it. It's interesting, though, that you've not got enough desire to visit it just as Carl the person. If we were doing a travel show, I'd visit that.
I'll tell you what it was. It was a bloke in Uganda whose farts were that bad that he could kill mosquitoes, right? So it's not a reason to book a holiday. It's not a reason to go somewhere. But it was an interesting thing. Within 6 foot or something, and they don't know why. He just eats normal food. He eats the same stuff as his mates. He's quite healthy. He washes. But he's got this fart that apparently could be worth millions. I mean, the mosquitoes are like the number one killer in the world.
It's a life
More
saver.
Deaths than anything else.
Yeah.
So he's got this inner power that if they can stick in some sort of spray can or whatever, he could sort the world up. Well, he probably wouldn't sort the world's problem. If no one dies, there's another problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't have too many people surviving. But anyway, so when I see things like that, I go, oh, it'd be good to sort of go and see that happen.
Yeah.
Because it's all right, it was on the BBC website, so that gives it a bit of weight. You're thinking, what's happened there? Why is this? This isn't, you know, it was all Brexit and politics. Why is this so low down on the story order? Why isn't this on news at 10?
Yeah.
And finally, you know. So I'd still do love that because it's what makes getting up in the morning worthwhile for me, those sort of things.
It's the fun stuff.
The fun stuff because I've just, as I've got older, I don't know, I worry about how long I'm going to be here.
Mm.
It's like, God, the world is, the news is depressing, everything seems broke, you know. Look at that, as on cue, police sirens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas when you're a kid, you don't, I don't, it was ice cream men, that's what you heard.
Yeah.
Everything seems depressing, you know, the world's knackered, we're polluting it, you know.
Why can't we go back to the days of monkey news rather than Brexit news?
Seriously, you know? It is. And Steve did all this with me with the travelling to broaden my mind. And a bit of me, I wish I was sort of the, what is it? What's that saying? Oh, what's the saying? When you don't know anything, you're happier.
Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah. There's something in it. I know you can't sort of just pretend nothing's, you know, bad is going on in the world. I know. But maybe leave that to the people who can do something about it.
It's the problem with social media at times, that we're just exposed to too much stuff. Like, we're not meant to know everything horrible that's going on in the world. It makes it seem... Like, I genuinely think stuff hasn't... Obviously, there's ups and downs of how things are going, but I think on the whole, things probably haven't got worse in the last 20 years than they were 40 years ago or whatever. But we're aware of every bad thing that happens, whereas previously we wouldn't be. If someone died in some small town in America, I wouldn't know about it in England, and now I do, and it's fucking horrible.
Why have we wanted this?
No idea.
But it does, honestly, it really... I sort of feel it, and one of the episodes, and this is kind of like about finding out that I'm fit and healthy, and I'm going to live for, like, another 40 years, and it's just like, do I want that?
Yeah.
You know, it's
genuinely, when you said you worry sometimes about how long you're going to live, I genuinely thought, in which direction are you worrying?
No, well, that's too little or too much,
because I am exactly the same. It's like, oh, I'm knackered now.
Yes.
Another 38 years or 40 or whatever it's going to be.
Yeah, and life
Oh, that seems like a big ask.
I mean, look, I didn't want to come on this and moan. I wanted to be happy. But I think everyone's feeling the same thing. I think everyone has it, where you get up and you're like, oh, God, I'm still here.
Yeah.
I'm going to get through this. What are my aims? Am I ever going to get there? And yeah, stuff gets me down. And I do need to find something else. You know, the oddities are weird, and that's good. There was also a story yesterday. Do you see those things about the innkeepers? Like these worms that are under the ocean.
No.
They look like knobs.
Right. Are these the ones who've washed up in California?
Yeah, in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And they're always under the sand, but for whatever reason, a storm happened and it's churned up the sand under the sea. So on this beach, there's like loads of knobs everywhere. And it's just stuff like that you go, God, I've been on the planet years. I didn't even know they existed. So that sort of learning stuff, of weird stuff, and thinking, what's the purpose of them there? What are these innkeepers? What are they here for? And stuff like that is good. But there's not enough of it. I need loads of that every day.
Yeah.
And people send stuff on Facebook. People are quite good at going, have you seen this? Have you seen this bloke with two heads? And sometimes it's like, yeah, I have, yeah. I have, I know about him. Because I'm hunting that stuff out and I can tell them about it.
No,
I have. It's like, yeah, I know about him. He's the one who, it's a story about, he's got one head, two faces.
Right.
And it's a story that one of them's sort of evil. The back of his head is like an evil down one. And it keeps the other bloke awake at night.
Oh, wow.
Terrifying.
That's horrific.
Don't know what truth is in it, but just the thought of that, I like it. I like it. It's my escape. And, you know, I don't have to watch a box set for it. It's not something that's dragged on and on about this weird thing. Just the image of this head with two faces and that idea that it's been... That's enough for me.
Yeah.
It's just... That's enough for me to sit there and go, imagine that.
Yeah.
Not being able to get away. Because I don't even think you could put plugs in your ears because there is ears as well. You haven't got separate ears. Do you know what I mean? So he'd probably pull them out. It's just like, oh, God. And in a way, that's the battle I'm going on about with Sick of It. It's that thing of the voice in your head. You cannot shut it up.
Yeah.
If it's down about something, you can't just switch it off. It's there continuously judging you all the time, you know, questioning everything you do. You know, like a judge, you know, Dragon's Den or whatever, just someone there going, why are you doing that?
I'm out.
What are you doing that for?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't remember why.
Is there anything, speaking of judging your choices and decisions, it feels like artistically the choice of these two versions of Carl and the stories you can tell, the things you can do, is perfect. Is there anything, has there been any points practically that you've been like, I regret this? Because again, you've got twice as much work, right? You've got to play both roles, you've got to change costumes. How often are you like, why the fuck did I make it like this?
Loads of times.
Can we have one of them be a cat?
It's like at the beginning, you know, I was like, are we creating a ball ache here, or what, one giant ball ache? And Richard, who I wrote it with, was like, no, I'm going changing, you know. No, it's fine. If anything, that'll give you a break, won't it? You'll be able to go off to the trailer and have, because it's important for me sometimes just to have a moment.
Yeah.
And it was like, you can go off to the trailer. It's a chance to have that moment because you've got to get changed to play the other side. And all that, you go, be all right then. Now, in reality, that doesn't happen. You know, there's a fella playing my body double called Mike, and sometimes, I remember one scene, we're in the field, it was freezing, in the field, they'd rented some house down the road for us to use to get changed in, right? But you've done filming, you know what it's like, everyone's always up against the clock, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's all rush, rush, rush. Mm-hmm. Hurry up. You know, we're going to lose the light. So there was a moment where it's like, I've got to get changed. And Richard's like, you have to go back to the house. Can you change here? So he's like, well, the clothes are there, aren't they? And he's like, well, Michael's got the clothes on that you need to wear, so just swap. So he's like, fucking hell. So I'm in a field here, in the middle of, you know, people, everyone looking on, changing swapping clothes, putting on some, you know, warm clothes from somebody else's body heat. And there was a scene that was, I had underpants on in a certain scene. And then they were like, oh, they're your underpants. And I went, yeah. And I said, well, we haven't got another pair. So he needs to wear them so we can get the shot. It's like, Richard, they're my underpants. And he's going, well, can you just, it's like, I've never been asked to take my underpants off to give to someone else. So it was stuff like that. It's just like, this is a bit of a low, isn't it? Is he even happy with it? Do you know, and you best check with Mike that he's happy putting on my underpants.
You see, Mike is the you at XFM at that point. He's just trying to do his job.
He's the one
that's going to get sacked. If this doesn't work out with the pants, you know, he's the one that's going to get sacked.
That's very true. Because
you're the Ricky. You're the one who's pushing the boundaries, right. Going, I don't want to take my pants off, all right?
You're right, you're
and
right.
Mike's sitting there going, just fucking give me the pants.
It was exactly that. You're right, because, you know, like I said, I was always changing bits and pieces at last minute. Where, you know, it's like, I wouldn't have a T-shirt on here. I've just got out of bed, so maybe I'd be topless here. And, you're asking a big ask for some people, aren't you? It's just, hang on a minute, I thought it was just a bit of a body double, not, like, showing flesh and that.
There
is a lot of people around. There's, like, 50-odd people working on set. And then, you know, I'm used to that now because of all the travel stuff and just being naked. Yeah. But you ask someone else to take the top off in front of people, it's not, everyone's not that.
Particularly if they've not prepared for it. If you know you're doing it, there's a different thing. A bit of a mental prepare, right, here's what's happening
today. Whereas if it's just, a bit.
Yeah, exactly. Have a bit of a tidy up, make everything as presentable as you need.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. You do make an effort. Yeah, that's like when you have your balls checked and that.
Yeah.
A little bit of an effort for the doctor.
Exactly. I'm sure he appreciates it.
But yeah, it was a pain in the arse. But everything in life, I think nothing's ever perfect.
I was going to ask like how it compares to working on something like Derek, where you've not written the lines. I chatted to David Earle about it at one point, and he was saying it was intimidating at times because there were people who were proper actors that were kind of, it put some pressure on. He said that you and him had, I won't say any names because I'm not going to tell any stories, but he said that you two had one moment where someone kind of said, you guys, you've got to get in line or whatever else. Yeah. It's like, no, he said it was fucking terrifying.
I'm not an actor.
He's trying his best.
Fell into that by accident and suddenly, you know, you got to remember everything I did before that, it was either with Ricky and Steve in a room and with microphones and we mates and we get on. And then the travel stuff was like, well, I've just got to say what's on my mind. That's the job. But suddenly, with a scripted thing, you are... I mean, Ricky was good at sort of going, look, you just do, you know, try and get across the idea that's on the page in your own way. You know, it wasn't word for word. But there was a bit... There was some stuff where it was important to hit certain phrases or lines so the next person knows what that it's their turn to talk.
Yeah.
And I just was like, this isn't... No one's prepared me for this. I've sort of just agreed to something that I haven't done.
Yeah.
My brain doesn't remember shit.
Yeah.
And it's not because I'm lazy. The night before, I'd be looking at stuff.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work like that.
And you're in instantly at quite a high level.
Yeah.
Because of the stuff you've done before that isn't related to this. So rather than, oh, your first one, you've got a walk on in Casualty.
Yeah.
Or you're being arrested in the Bill.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you've got big scenes in big moments.
Ricky said, oh, listen, it's just a small bit. You're just a caretaker in the background. Don't worry about it. And it kind of got more and more. And I was like, I can't do this.
Or when flip on that guy in one of the episodes, the guy's there doing all the checks. And it's the highlight of the series. But again, there's a lot of pressure on that because that is the point where your character stops just being essentially Carl.
Yeah,
stops being that moany little guy and goes... Fuck you, kind of thing.
Yeah,
no, you've got to deliver that.
And
it's a lot to ask.
I remember saying to him, can you take that out? Because I can't do it. That's like proper acting, that.
Yeah.
And he went, look, just do it, and then we'll see. We'll make a decision later. If it's really bad, we'll use it. But then he was happy with it. But it was just the remembering of lines. I found out by doing this that my short-term memory is better than... long-term. So, like, if it came to lines and stuff, I was better literally having the lines in my hand like moments before we're about to record.
Yeah.
There's no point me doing homework at night. I could do it and then I'd wake up in the morning, I go, oh, it's gone. I don't know any of it. It's pointless. And that was the stress with that. It was just, I mean, Dave was the same. David Earle was the same. So at least I had someone
again, it's hilarious to hear because those are the two characters that stole the show for me that I thought were amazing. So to hear from both going, I thought that we were out of our depth.
And because, at least in Sick of It, I'm kept busy and I'm needed on every scene. Whereas in that, there was moments when, you know, it's like, it's weird. They get you in at 6 a.m. and then they don't call for you until... 10:30.
Yeah,
and sat there working yourself up like a nervous wreck.
Whenever I've had that, quite early on, I've had to remind myself I've worked in factories, so I'm being paid to sit in a trailer here. It's all right. Do you know what I mean? Because you do, as soon as you get it a few days in a row, you do get into that going like, I was picked up from the hotel or whatever at 5 o'clock, and I've been sat here in a stupid costume for 4 hours. What's going on?
I tell you what though, working in the factory, you sort of feel like you've got a use and you've made a difference. When you've been sat there with a stupid wig on
it's not a relaxing,
and you sat there going, I'm just a bit of meat here, that you feel like some sort of prostitute gets called up, that there's a customer here.
Yeah.
Room 4, you're going in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you're just waiting to be called.
Yeah.
And it didn't
come and
no
do your
good.
Little dance,
and then you've got to be
off.
You've got to be ready to do that dance.
Yeah.
You might not be. You might have worked yourself up into a wreck, and then it's like right now. It's like hang on, I'm just been sat there for 4 hours going through over and over this.
Yeah.
Because if you do that, you normally can't do it.
Yeah,
suddenly
you've overdone
it. So you do have to leave it so it seems a bit fresh. So yeah, it's not for. To be honest, it's the wrong sort of work for me. It is. My head would be a lot happier. If it wasn't about money, my head would be happier probably doing something a bit repetitive in terms of, like, something in a factory.
Yeah.
Where that's what you do. And then when you clock off, you see, I say all this, but I know that that's what I did do. And I remember going, I can't do this.
All you wanted was something else.
I wanted something else. But is that life for you? You always want something else. So you're never happy.
I guess it is. Well, I mean, to wrap things up, because you did kind of, you were thrust into it almost
by accident.
Unwillingly. Yeah, kind of by accident. How have you found it? Because it's something that I've found, like I do a drunk cast as well, I recorded one last night. It's me and two mates who I've just known all my life, and we get drunk for 5 hours and we put it out over Christmas. And because we're mates, we're really horrible to each other.
And
we bully each other and it's fun and it's a laugh. But every now and then, someone online will jump in because they've listened to the podcast, they've heard it, they're our mates, they'll jump in and insult me or one of them, and I won't find it as funny.
No.
And I wondered how you found that, because you came into the prominence with, as I said, you're doing them every week, so there's so much, it's just work, it's just getting through, but it's you and Steve and Ricky all having a laugh, but bullying each other as well.
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden, as you said, you walk on Alan Carr, and he's like, you haven't made an effort, and it's been like, what? We've not. What's going on?
I've only just met you.
Yeah. So have you had that? Had to deal with that? People having that familiarity to have a dig and be horrible when you're like,
it's sometimes they're not being horrible, it's just being over familiar.
Yes.
Yeah. I've said before, it's kind of what I imagine having dementia would be like, because people just come up and say stuff to you as if they know you.
Yeah.
And it's always, I always have that moment when I go, do I know them? Because they're being that familiar. Do I actually know her? And I have to sort of go through my head and go, I don't know, it's just a bloke who sort of has listened to stuff over and over again and knows me. And
it's a one-way relationship.
It is, and I struggle making, like, new mates because of it, in a way.
Mm.
Because I always feel like I'm the one on the back foot. They know a lot about me.
And I know nothing
about them.
Yeah.
And it's really weird, because there's a bit of me when I go to say something, and then I think, oh, they'll think, like... Or they might go, oh, I've heard this, mate. Yeah, podcast season 3, episode 4.
Yeah.
And I go, well, it was just that. Sorry about that.
Just reminded me.
I'll try and think of something new here for you.
Yeah, some new material
in life. But like you said, it's not. It's just that's how chat is, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're all sharing stories.
Yeah.
That's life.
Yeah.
Sharing stories. And there's only so many things that happen. And then the other problem is, some stories that happen in my life, they might work on a podcast. But when you're telling someone normal, they look at me like I'm a loon. So, like, when I'm telling you about the farty man or whatever, a lot of people would go, you know, there's a general election. Do you know what I mean? Why are you reading that? Or there's just things that are very me. But if I'm saying that stuff without the laughter track of Ricky picking holes out of it.
The human laughter track.
You see people sort of edging away.
Yeah.
I had a builder around. I was telling him about a... See, I'm even nervous about telling you about it, because it isn't really a story. It was just a thing. But we've had this spider for a bit,
right,
just near the front door, house spider.
Yeah.
And every morning when I've come down, it's there and it's webbed, quite big. And then the cat comes out the garage and goes over to it and sort of taps it. It never kills stuff. It always gets mice and all that, but never kills them. It brings them in.
Right.
And this spider, it's not going to kill it, just sort of taps it, and the spider runs off under the thing, and the cat sat there watching, waiting for the spiders to come out again. And that's kind of it. That's what goes on. That's the cat's life. That's its morning thing. The spider, it's like, oh, here's the cat again. I'm gonna run out. And then the other day, the spider wasn't there. It was somewhere else, and it was walking really slowly. And I was like, it's not well. Not well, this spider. And builder come round, sort of finished something. He came in. I was going, can you just hang on a minute? He's going, there's a spider. there's a spider here just now. It's normally over there. It's happy. And I could see him looking at me like, what the fuck are you doing? But I love insects and that. So I was going, oh, here it is. And it was walking really slowly. And I was going, just watch where you're walking, will you, mate? And I managed to sort of scoop it up. And do you know spiders, normally when you scoop them up, they leg it.
Yeah, that's scary.
It was walking really slow. And I was going, it's not well. So I put it in a plant pot, an empty plant pot. And then I went back later and it was dead. It just, do you know how they get like rigor mortis?
Mm.
And the builder was like, have you put it in? I said, it's dead. And I think he could see that I was a bit kind of like, shit, you know, I like that. And it's sad, like the next day the cat was sat there waiting for it again.
Yeah.
And it's stuff like that. A lot of people, I can see your eyes drifting now, Pip. You're thinking, why are you telling me this?
It's only because the door opened.
But no, it's just that things like that get me down. And you could say that my life must be pretty good to be worried about how spiders just like dying. But it sort of just sums up life for me, that.
Yeah.
It's like there it was one day, next day it isn't.
Yeah.
I'm missing it, the cat's missing it, but the builder couldn't give a shit about it.
And the fact is that you got involved and tried to help.
I always do.
That's the thing that makes it sad. It's not just you woke up and it was gone. It was like you woke up, there's something
saw
wrong
it.
Here.
It was like it was using its last
I'll
breath
pop it
to
here. Maybe this will
to
help.
Go, like, I've made it through the night. I just want to say thanks for letting me be in your house. It was that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But, it's stories like that I'm sort of regretting telling you. But on a podcast with Rick and Steve, they would have, like, ripped that apart.
Yeah.
And it's funny how that, to some people, have you heard the spider story?
Yeah.
Have you heard him?
Yeah.
And when Ricky said, da-da-da, without that, they go, fuck me. Has he lost it or what? So
is he missing a
it's kind
spiders?
Of, that's what I'm saying about, we're sick of it, the tone of it, that he's trying to say something and I'm trying to say something, but sometimes people didn't know I was trying to say something.
Yeah.
They were just going, oh, this will be good. Let's see Ricky, you know, rip his ass out for this one, or whatever.
Yeah.
Is that a saying? I've heard someone say
that.
Yeah,
it is.
That all came from you saying people being over familiar and knowing you when they don't know me and how I struggle meeting new people because that builder's
like, why do you care about, how do you know he's walking slow? How do you know what speed he normally walks at?
And I felt a bit kind of embarrassed, but then I was like, no, that's me, that's what I find interesting in life. And so I don't know if anyone's learnt anything new about me here today, Pip.
I'll wrap things up now. What's ahead? I mean, as we're recording this, we're just before Christmas and New Year. Is there any TV or anything that you've got planned to get watched or that you're excited
about? I want to finish
the
end of Upright, this thing with Tim Minchin.
Right.
Enjoying that. I was on like episode 3 of that. I just want it to happen. I think like you've touched on it in the way that you said New Year's Eve and stuff like that. For a lot of people who have normal jobs, that's holiday time. It's time away from work, so they can enjoy it.
Yeah.
But when you're kind of freelance, self-employed and all that, weekends are the time when I don't leave the house.
Yeah.
And it's the same with New Year and Christmas.
Yeah.
Everyone else is going, it's Christmas. And I'm a bit like, I can't wait for this to be over.
Yeah.
Again, not being miserable. I just don't like the forced fun. And I know that it's there for families to have a catch up. And if I don't go and see my mum and dad, they're like, well, it's Christmas. And it's like, yeah, but I come and see you all the time.
Yeah.
This is for people who
don't
have
that.
Time for it.
Yeah.
You know, but they're still kind of like, yeah, but it's Christmas. And it's like, yes, I know it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I saw you last week and I'll be seeing you again next week. Christmas is just, I mean, it's December 25th. What's so special about December 25th? What is that when he was born or what? Or is someone just.
Exactly. And again, it's a religion in a world that is no longer religious.
Well,
religious holiday for people who, by in large, aren't celebrating it for any religious reasons.
No, it's just a stress.
And my brother doesn't celebrate Christmas
at all.
And he doesn't, because he sees it as a religious holiday. He's not religious.
How's he feeling now then? We're a couple of weeks away from Christmas. Is it what?
He's a postman at the moment, so he's feeling tired because he's having
to, again,
it's not that he hates Christmas. It's just he doesn't celebrate it because it's not his religion. It's the same with, the way I explained it to my mum is he acts on Christmas the way that she acts on Ramadan.
Oh.
If she bumps into someone who's in that belief, then she'll be congratulating them and saying happy Ramadan and all these other things. But if not, she'll be getting on with her life. And that's his outlook on Christmas. It's not that he's against it. My mum isn't against Islam. Yeah, she, it's yeah, just she yeah. doesn't celebrate it. So, yeah, that's his outlook. But, yeah, it's constant. My parents, like my dad's, my dad always used to have us round for a Christmas breakfast. And then when my brother stopped doing Christmas 1 year, and my dad listens to this, he'll be fine. He at one point around that time, he was like, do you want to come round for breakfast tomorrow? It's like, don't pretend it's just it's a Christmas breakfast. There's no one invites someone round for breakfast. That's not a thing, or not in Essex anyway. So yeah, they kind of, they originally they'd start to try and sneak Christmas celebrations under my brother's radar, not realising that.
But
they
he'll could turn
just
up for the Christmas dinner.
Yeah, he'll be there. It's
put
all fine.
On, put a little cracker at him.
He'd probably rather not, but he'll go for it. Yeah, if he's pushed, he'll go for it. So it's yeah, he's not against any of it. It's just he's got other plans. Like this year, he's planning on going out and doing a bit of a field recording because he's there's a thing he's looking into a lot at the moment that's about field recordings with no human made sound, and he figured when better to do that than Christmas morning?
Because everyone's in.
Everyone will be in. He can go and find somewhere nice that no one will be about.
Yeah.
And just do some recordings. So he's excited about
that. For himself. He's doing that for himself.
Yeah, it's a project, or a friend of his is working on something. It's a weird little project he's doing. But yeah, he's excited about that on Christmas. But again, that's confusing. But again, the fun thing there is that's going to take a priority for him. If my mum says dinner's at one, he'll be like, oh, I'm recording until two. And she'll be proper confused by that. She'll be like, what do you mean you're recording till two? He's like, oh, I found a nice tree to go and sit up to get a nice.
That's good, though.
I like
it's good
it.
That
I
he's,
like that kind
that
of thing.
He's found his thing that he wants to do and he's happy and he's just getting on with it.
Yeah, and not falling to do what everyone has told them is here's the way you enjoy this.
Yeah, that's what I don't like in life, the force thing, like you just said then, you will enjoy this.
Yeah.
It's Christmas Day, smile. Yeah. You know, on cue. And it's one it's more difficult to opt out of than the others, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can get away with not having an Easter egg.
Everyone
you can get
loves
away
the
with not having a pancake.
Yeah.
But, you know, no, the old Christmas is just, yeah, got to take part. But on that note, have a good Christmas.
Yeah. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me on.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was Carl. I hope you enjoyed that. I thought it was a wonderful chat. I couldn't have been happier. I feel we could have talked for hours, but I was delighted for the hour or so that we got. I forgot to mention earlier, Pod Bible magazine is out every other month. It's something that I work on. But the Pod Bible podcast is out every week. And previous guests on that include James Acaster and Ed Gamble, the all of the Gossip Mongers lot, Johnny Vaughan, Kate Thornton, all sorts of amazing people. But we had our end of the year polls, and Distraction Pieces came third in the interview section. So thank you to everyone that voted on that. Adam Buxton rightfully won it with Richard Herron at number two. But go and have a look, Pod Bible. mag.com is where you can read the magazines and that kind of thing. The Pod Bible podcast is on all podcast platforms, and check us out on social media. We're regularly posting podcast recommendations, interviews, chats, all sorts of, basically, if you're into podcasts, then you should be following Pod Bible on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I'll be back next week, as I mentioned, with the Safdie brothers. Well, I don't think we give any spoilers, but if you can get out this weekend to see Uncut Gems, as said, if you listen to my Films of the Year podcast last week, it's amazing. It comfortably made it into the Films of the Year, and I really urge. As said, I do a top 16, and there was only four that I said, you're really missing something if you don't see it in the cinema. And that was Uncut Gems, Monos, Waves, and The Lighthouse. I guess I spoke of The Irishman and Marriage Story in the cinema because of focus. And on streaming services, you can get unfocused or distracted. But yeah, that's still only half of them that, as you know, I think all films are better in the cinema, but there was four, and then maybe those other two, so six of the 16 that I felt you're really not getting the full experience if you don't watch it in the cinema. As I said, I think with all films, it's improved by being in the cinema, but these were that. So yeah, catch Uncut Gems is what I'm trying to tell you. It's great. And tune in Friday at 10 p.m. to watch Carl Pilkington's new series of Sick of It. I think, as we discussed in this, I think there's probably a few people who maybe gave it a look and felt it wasn't for them. But as we discuss, it's not meant to be The Office or Extras or one of these. It's a completely different tone and vibe, and it's really good. I really appreciate it, and I think it's a unique and powerful show. Anyway, I'll be back next week with the Safdie brothers. Until then, feel free to go and check out the Drunk Cast if you missed it, the Films of the Year 2019 episode of the podcast. There's loads of good stuff. Enjoy yourselves. See you later. Ta-ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.